Sometime in the 830s and 840s, the Slavic prince Pribina was expelled from the rising state of Great Moravia. After adventuring through Bavarian courts, he had ended up being granted the lands of Lower Pannonia. These were lands of anarchy and distinctly lacking in an identity, a story covered in more detail last episode. From these barren origins, however, Pribina and his Frankish sponsors would attempt to create a new Pannonian Slavic identity, centering around the burgeoning cultural capital of Blatnograd, off of Lake Balaton. This goal would be shared by Pribina's son, Kutsel. Kutsel would successfully expand his realm with gifted Frankish land and reappropriated Moravian land, so that this new duchy covered a nice chunk of the Danubian plains. It was seemingly protected by the grand moat of the Danube to its east, and the mighty power of the Franks to its west. It would use its unique position as the Slavic bridge to begin forging an identity, a reason for its state to exist, and a story to explain the culture which was forming around the town of Blatnograd. However, in the decade between 896 and 906, the Duchy of Kutsel would be destroyed completely by the invading Magyar, despite their best effort. All mention of it would cease from that point, and its capital city would be reduced to a small village in Hungary today. Why would some states founded by adventurers and warriors be able to consolidate the various self-sufficient estates which made them up? Why would some families come to be identified with certain cultures? Why would cultures tend to separate into coherent divisions 1,000 years before the modern conceptions of nationalism? As it turns out, state formation is a very difficult thing, and the key to longevity would be for the elite to find an identity and match it with the identity of the people under them. As we have seen with the Duchy of Lower Pannonia, or was it the Duchy of Pannonia, or the Duchy of Balaton? Identity can be a difficult thing to nail down. Ultimately, success and failure for these states would be a process of trial and error. Between the Seas, and to the introduction for the fifth series of our show. This series will look, in turn, at several identities from the 9th century who will emerge onto the inner European scene, only to be put down nearly as fast. Some will leave lasting legacies on future cultures, but some will be forgotten, almost to totality. So, before we get into these stories, I think it's nice to have an idea of what the role of a state is, and how it developed from the scattered peoples living on the lands of inner Europe. Let's start with the biggest and most vague concept I can think of, society. Society can be thought of as the framework that a group of people creates for themselves, and then lives in. It's a grouping of spoken and unspoken rules that allow for cooperation among different social groups. In other words, it is simply how people organize themselves. While this sounds complicated, I think it can be seen as only being made up of two parts, those being the state and culture. And the state and culture themselves are simply two words that represent types of order. The state is the order that is explicitly created as a framework by men, while culture is a framework that is spontaneously created over time, without direct input from individuals. The state is a fabricated order, while culture is a spontaneous one. The state often tends to get inserted in as the concept of society itself, but it's important to remember that while the state may play a very large role in most people's lives today, this was not the case for the vast majority of history, where the role it played directly tended to be quite small. Culture, the intangible network of traditions, histories, family structures, acceptable hierarchies, patterns of ownership, has always played the much larger role in creating a framework that a group of people lives under. Still, the state and the culture of a certain population tend to be very much entwined, as the state's rules are normally based around an interpretation of cultural norms. Normally, their rules are created so that different groups may come together with a common understanding. Individuals and groups can work and plan around each other, allowing for specialization of work into war or artisanry or agriculture, relying on authority and law to keep order where traditions of the culture may not sustain groups of certain purposes, or of slightly differing traditions. So in short, both aspects are needed to create a cohesive framework. They impose necessary limitations that allow for cooperation and development at scale. To contrast them, though, culture is organic, while the state is intentionally created. A culture is more effective and fulfilling for its members, while a state is more adaptable and scalable. Without a culture, a people will become nihilistic, atomized, and interchangeable. Without a state, a group becomes unable to respond to crises or mobilize resources at scale to defend itself. A state is created and governed by the principles of power and politics, while a culture is by longer-term patterns of responses to social forces. Both culture and the state affect each other, though of the two, culture is far more powerful and necessary. Both also possess hierarchies which make them coherent, while coming with serious trade-offs. The easiest unit to understand a culture is the family, while the easiest way to understand a state is by looking at their military. This is all well and good, but very abstract, so what is the practical takeaway? As the state is the only aspect of society which is intentionally created by people, it tends to be the subject of human action which is taken by societal leaders. Cultural movements, while vastly more important, only tend to be recognized in hindsight, and are certainly due to the actions of the many rather than the few. So, any grouping of people created through human action will be through the creation of a state which is attached to some existing culture, rather than the other way around. So let's say you are a band of rugged and eccentric warriors on horseback, who have the intention of creating a state for their society. Say you just conquered a region of fragmented villages, and no such state existed before. How would you do it? Well, any state needs a culture to build off of. All it needs to do is legitimize this culture, in order to allow that culture's framework to work as its own. Laws and authority only come in when a larger scale, more decisive action, or a change in course is deemed to be needed. Laws and authority had their foundations covered in the episode on the Italo-Celts, and we will return to it again when we step back to look at medieval society going into the High Middle Ages. For our ragtag band of horsemen, attaching our state to a culture will be a far more important task than picking any correct combination of written laws. And how is this all-important task of state creation done? The attaching of a military force to a cultural framework? The unifying force between state and culture is identity. Identity is a concept critical for the Middle Ages. Due to the abundance of self-sufficient institutions and classes, each person typically possessed within them several different identities. These identities would coexist with each other, rather than fight for supremacy. As an example, a farm worker may have the following identities. First, a Christian, a member of the Church of Christendom. Second, a speaker of Old German. Third, a speaker of a specific German dialect. Fourth, an East Francian. Fifth, a Bavarian. Sixth, a semi-professional guard of the local fortifications. Seventh, a member of the village of N. Eight, a farmer of the hills, rather than the plains below. There could be even further identities based on family, marriage ties, artisan work, local count or duke, specific parish, and so on. At this time of history, the local community was the most important identity for most. This meant the village and those identities and factions which sprang from it, such as being the local herder. However, this does not mean that those higher, more abstract identities did not exist. They did, and varied in importance as events happened throughout history. Nationalism as a concept, for example, is often only applied to those revolutionaries of the 19th and 20th centuries who either united or pushed for the separation of specific cultures to create nation-states during the tumultuous politics of that period. However, this does not mean that people had no concept of their wider national culture as compared to the groups around them. Language was often the determining factor here, and people would refer to themselves as belonging to one people or another, even if dialects remained fragmented and societies remained multicultural. It was possible to spring from this a certain national pride or identification of cultural aspects. Very commonly, writers of the Middle Ages would characterize a certain people as possessing certain skills or personality traits, which they were more subjected to. This often, of course, depended upon that writer's personal interactions with people of that language, but the concept of cultural identities remained. And it is here that we can find the concept of state creation. Over a region, many overarching identities will be created by the cultures that live within them. They may be language, or they may be geographical area, terrain type, dominant clans, or so on. Out of all of these options, the elites of the state must choose an identity to latch onto. In doing so, they will claim that their state exists for that cultural identity, and they are now charged with protecting that group. And in exchange, they will legitimize that culture's ways as its framework and the basis for its legitimacy and authority. When done well, this will allow most of the population to be able to buy into the state, and to take it and its soldiers and banners as their own. They will work to protect it against outsiders, and to form its next generations of elites. If an identity is strong enough, then even if the state is put down, its memory will remain, perhaps to re-emerge again one day. The challenge comes in that these bands of warriors, which created so many of these states lost to history during the early medieval period, had to create these identities, in many cases from scratch. With luck, they may align well with an underlying cultural identity possessed by much of the populace, but just as easily, they may not. It is not as if they were presented a list of possible identities to claim, along with each one's efficacy. As the brutal cycles will show through this series, it would, as always, be a process of trial and error. Thank you for listening to Between the Seas. I apologize for my abstract ramblings today, but I hoped it may present one possibility to help get in the mind of these inner European populations of the period. They ultimately had a distant relationship with their states, and a far closer one with their communities. The states, which did form, would have to grasp at straws to create something to last, building on these faint ideas of some pan-community identity shared by populations. I hope you'll find these next few episodes quite interesting. Also, as a reminder, feel free to email me any further questions or comments. I do enjoy hearing thoughts on the show, the region, or the time. With that, this has been Jacob, and I hope your own trials and errors may bear much fruit.